ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Last time in the met, we discussed an introduction to Bhagavad Gita. Today we are beginning with the first chapter here. As we said last time also, before we begin to study Bhagavad Gita, one has to understand that Bhagavad Gita is no ordinary literature. Back side of this Bhagavad Gita, as it is, there is a quote, very famous quote by Henry David Thoreau. He is saying, in the morning I bathe myself, I bathe my intellect in the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, in comparison with which our modern world and its literature seem puny and trivial. He says, the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is so deep that it is relevant at all time, place and circumstances. Often people in India have a notion that Ramayana or Mahabharata or Puranas are all some mythology. Even people who have a lot of faith in God, they use the word Hindu mythology. It has become such a commonplace term in India. People often use the word mythology. You know the meaning of the word myth? Myth means some fiction story. Like we have so many sci-fi stories. Similarly, they think even Mahabharata, Ramayana are also like some fiction. In fact, in the modern times, often many science fictions are considered as if they are reality. Nowadays, you don't know what is being done in the electronics field and what is still in the fiction field. Sometimes they both are thought of to be overlapping with one another. But itihasa means history. Not mythology. In fact, the word mythology was coined by Indologists, some Christians who came to India long ago. So they were trying to somehow or other introduce Bible amongst all the Indians. Although they distributed Bible freely, Indians didn't take it up very seriously because they were rooted in the Vedic literatures very deeply. They were not at all interested in any other literature. And they were wondering how these people are so much attached to their rituals and rites in India. How to change these people? Then they called many Indologists from abroad and trained them under the Brahmanas of India. Of course, the Brahmanas of India were poor and they were ready to take up the task of teaching these people Sanskrit. And after having learned Sanskrit, he published several books. You almost have heard of Maximalism. If you go to libraries today, Humanities and Social Sciences Department, Maximalist books are very easily available there. He was one of the first translators of Puranas and Itihasas into English language. But they did a great disservice to the Puranas. Like for example, the word Aja. Aja means unborn. Aja also means goat. So if you translate the word as goat, it doesn't make any sense. If you make it as unborn, it has meaning. So often Sanskrit words have several meanings. So they distorted the meanings to present it in such a way that Indians will start developing a hatred to study the Puranas. And also in the interpretations, they would write that this seems too fantastic to believe. How can such a thing happen? How can Lord Krishna lift the gourds and heal with his left hand? These are all simply mythological. So they coined the word myth. And the Trinity word also was coined by them. Often Trinity is used for Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh. So they use the word Trinity for Father, Son and Holy Spirit in the Bible. So in this way, in a very subtle fashion it was introduced. And people, Indians themselves, after they started going to the English colleges, they started developing doubt on the Shastras, started losing track, and they were not given Sanskrit education. Gradually everything was spread as mythological. That is why in India there are over 800 interpretations of Bhagavad Gita. But unfortunately, majority of these interpretations are lying in libraries covered with dust for no one to read. What then to speak of the practical applicability of these interpretations of Bhagavad Gita? That is a very far-fetched idea. Many of these Bhagavad Gita interpretations are lying in the libraries. Nobody reads them even. But this Bhagavad Gita, when Prabhupada wrote this Bhagavad Gita, he called it as Bhagavad Gita as it is. Why he called it as it is? Because when this Bhagavad Gita was published and was distributed in foreign countries, within 3 to 4 years, thousands and thousands of people started taking that seriously. Within a decade or so, there were over 1 million followers of Hare Krishna, Hare Rama chanting all over the world. What knowledge is that knowledge that brings about such a widespread awareness and arouses the people to take to God consciousness with so much vigor? That is nothing short of the true light of Bhagavad Gita. Just like when the sun rises in the morning, all the thieves and rogues, they will run away to go to some hiding. But when it is dark, then it is a good time for the thieves, isn't it? When there is a blackout, and the whole city is blacked out, there is no power of electricity, and thieves will be very happy. But once the sun comes in the sky, then all thieves will run away. Similarly, when the real knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is presented, then that brings the ultimate reality in the lives of everyone. And one can experience, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, pratyaksha avagamam dharmya. One can practically realize what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita by sincerely practicing it. So within Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada has explained that Bhagavad Gita should be understood to be real and not mythological. Even today, there is a station called Kurukshetra, isn't it? You can go and see. There is a place where Bhishma Pitama was lying called as Banaganga. And you can see the place where the Pandavas resided. There is Kamyakavan, even today you can go and see. And you can see all the places where Pandavas travelled all over India. They are all historical places. Somebody may say, okay, using all these historical places, somebody must have written a nice story. Somebody has cooked a nice story, they may say. But the excavations that have been done in the recent times in Dwaraka, as well as in Kurukshetra, they are revealing the evidences that certainly a very high-class civilization has existed in the past. Because from Kurukshetra they have found so many nuclear fuels at the same spot where the Yudha was held. There is Jyotisar, and the place where Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Even today this spot is there. And from Dwaraka, recently I was, while searching the internet, we take many articles from the internet. So in Google search engine, I found in the Vedic Encyclopedia, there is a very elaborate information about Dwaraka, the ruins of Dwaraka. There are over 40 pages information given about all the excavations from Dwaraka. The crowns used, the jewellery used, the pots that were used. And not only they have corroborated that a very great civilization existed 5,000 years ago, but also Lord Sri Krishna has existed. A person called Krishna has existed. It is not just some fiction. So it is very important that before one gets to hear Bhagavad Gita, understand Bhagavad Gita, one has to know that Bhagavad Gita is a discussion between Krishna and Arjuna. It was really spoken, and it should be heard in proper spirit of devotion, as we spoke last week. Now we are beginning with the first chapter, but we need to know a little background of why this war took place, this battlefield of Kurukshetra. Kuru originally was a very pious king. So he had performed the civil penances and had prayed to the Lord, Supreme Lord, that although generally people sow the seeds on the ground, I want to sow the seed of Dharma in this place. That's why it became called as Dharma Kshetra. So that anybody who is born in this land or who lives in this land, they will all become liberated and achieve all perfection. And the descendants of Kuru at a later time, there was Vichitra Virya. And Vichitra Virya, although he married Ambika Ambalika, he died prematurely, without leaving any issues. Later, by the mystic potency of Vedavyas, through Ambika, Ambalika and the maidservant, three children were born. Dhritarashtra was the eldest, then Pandu and Vidura. Now, amongst the three, Dhritarashtra was certainly the senior most, but he was blind. So being blind, he was not chosen to become the next king. So they chose Pandu. Pandu was the brightest amongst the three. So Pandu was made the king. And Pandu was ruling for some time. And Pandu always was very much inclined to go to forest and make the ascetics and live in seclusion. He liked it very much. And in this way he used to spend a lot of time in the forest. And at one time he was cursed by one Kindamarishiya, that he will be dying in a particular situation. And in this way, after the five Pandav children were born, when they were very young, he left his body. Now the five Pandav children, they were too young to take up the kingdom. They couldn't take up the kingdom directly. Because of that, Dhritarashtra was made the next king, although he was blind. So that it will be like a stopgap arrangement. Dhritarashtra will take care of the kingdom. By the time the children will grow up, and when they grow to the right age, then one of the Pandavas, the leading Pandavas, can take up the kingdom. But then when the Pandava children grew up, the Kauravas, headed by Dhritarashtra, and Dhritarashtra was very attached to his son, Duryodhana, they became very fond of ruling the kingdom. And they, some or other, wanted to get rid of these Pandava children, because they will come to the rule. And of course, the Pandava children were very brilliant, and they were very chivalrous, and all the citizens loved them. And this was like adding fuel to fire of envy that Kauravas already had. So they wanted somehow or other get rid of them. Then, headed by Duryodhan, all the other Kauravas, they made a plot. How these Pandavas can be killed, they can be finished. So they made many plans by which they tried to destroy them. And later on, Pandavas only flourished more instead of getting destroyed. And in this way, Duryodhana had to adopt some foul means by using some gambling match by which he tricked the Pandavas to lose all their wealth and prosperity. And he sent them on exile to forest. Now the understanding was like this, that 14 years they would spend both in the forest as well as on Ajnatavas, as everything. They would return back and then resume the kingdom. And they would rule the kingdom. And Duryodhana had agreed for that. But then while they were in the forest, Duryodhana was always thinking that if they come back, then I will lose the kingdom. How to see that they don't come back? So he was always making plans. But then Pandava successfully finished that term. And now they came back. And they sent Krishna as a peace messenger. And Krishna came to the court of Duryodhana, and Duryodhana had no plans to entertain Krishna's peace mission. Because he was convinced that now I have a big army. While the Pandavas are in the forest, I have already taken many kings to my side. Now when they come back, I should be so powerful that I will vanquish the Pandavas. And I will lose the kingdom. You see, Duryodhana, although he was very fond of ruling the kingdom, he was very atrocious. An ideal king has many duties to perform. The ideal king is supposed to see that he protects five people. Brahmins, who are protecting the very culture, the cows, which nourish the intelligence of the Brahmins, as well as cows are considered the wealth of society, and the women, and children, and old men. So one is supposed to protect all these people. And one is supposed to establish dharma in society, how to worship God, how to keep God in the center of one's life, and how even the king himself should be a Raja Rishi, or he himself goes to the temple of God and worships God and teaches people how to surrender to God. And the king should be free from all vices, like exploiting the people in general, swindling the property and everything. But here was Duryodhana, who was a personification of adharma. And he was ruling Hastinapur and people were all tortured very much. They all wished well that the Pandavas should be ruling them. Now the Pandavas rightfully finished their term and they came back and sought for the kingdom. In fact, Yudhishthira was so compassionate that he told Krishna that because we are Kshatriyas, our duty is to rule. Kshatriyas have some piece of land which they rule. So let him give us just 5 villages and we will rule it. And Krishna went for the peace mission. And Duryodhana was so cruel with Pandavas, he said, I cannot even give a tiny patch of land that could be contained in the tip of a needle. I can't even give that much. Isn't it? He said like that. Not only that, he tried to even arrest Krishna with thousands of men who came with ropes from besieging him from all different directions. And they couldn't capture Krishna. In fact, Krishna showed a Vishwarupa darshan that, revealing his supreme divinity. And everyone in the court fell flat on the ground, offering him obeisances and prostrations, offering prayers to him. Still, Duryodhana was so foolish that he couldn't recognize the Lord's authority, Lord's supremacy. He said, Krishna, why are you showing all your mystic yogic powers? Don't try to frighten me. I will fight the war and see that the kingdom is mine. And then Krishna went back and the war became inevitable. Here now the first chapter begins here where both the Kaurava army and Pandava army have assembled together and they mix the battlefield. Arjuna is standing with Krishna on the chariot, Krishna being the chariot driver, and Dhritarashtra being blind, he is getting assistance from Sanjaya, who is telling him what's happening in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So here, in the first verse, he is asking, Dharma Kshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yudhsavaha Mamaka. You can see the word Mamaka. Mamaka means my men. Mamaka, Pandava Cheva. And they are Pandu's men, he is saying. What's happening between my men and the Pandu's men? So in this way, we can see how Dhritarashtra is so discriminative between his own sons and the Pandavas, not seeing that ultimately all are belonging to one Kuru dynasty. He doesn't say like that. And it is very much in great anxiety that because this Kurukshetra was originally presided over by Kuru, Maharaj Kuru, and it's a very holy land, and the holy land is going to favor people who are truly virtuous. Just like in India-Pakistan matches, the matches in India, and Indians are very happy. You have extra edge, isn't it? And similarly, he thought, now Pandavas have extra edge. Why? Because they are virtuous. And this land is a holy land. So there's a likelihood of them winning. So what will happen to my sons? So that was his anxiety here. In the Kurukshetra land, is considered holy for various reasons. Many sages and saints have come there to perform severe penances. Even Parashuram performed penance there long, long ago. Even there is a Radha Krishna Milan Mandir in Kurukshetra. On the solar eclipse day, Lord Krishna meets the Vrijavasis. So it is holy for various reasons. Why he was asking like this, all the armies assembled and they were playing the conch shells. And when the Pandavas played the conch shells, all the people on the side of Kauravas, their hearts were shattered. And they were very, very frightened. They knew although Pandavas are minority, they have a very great power because they are on the side of Krishna. As the verse says, Dayastu Pandu Putrana Yesham Pakshe Janardana. Dayastu Pandu Putrana Yesham Pakshe Janardana. Lord Janardana, now Krishna is on the side of Pandavas. So Dayastu Pandu Putrana. They will certainly emerge victorious. And this was the understanding of everyone. Just like in a battlefield, sometimes there are weeds that come up in between. Sometimes the weeds start taking the water and they start growing much bigger than the original paddy plants. So then the farmer comes and plucks them out. Similarly, it is explained that in the Kurukshetra battlefield, Kauravas and their followers are called as the weeds. Why are they called as the weeds? Because they are siding Adharma, side of Adharma. So Lord Krishna is Dharma personified. He is actually the proponent of Dharma ultimately. So he is here to to pluck out all the weeds and to re-establish dharma, that will be headed by Yudhishthira Maharaj later. So in this way, the Kurukshetra battle began. But right at the outset, Arjuna, he told Krishna to take him in between both the armies. And he wanted to see who are all on the other side, who are going to fight with him. When he saw all of them, he saw Bhishma, he saw Drona, all the names are mentioned in the first chapter. He became very frightened. And he put his Gandiva bow down, sniffing tears, saying that, Krishna, I cannot fight. So he told five reasons, four of which we'll see today briefly. One of the reasons was that he felt extreme compassion for all his relatives and friends. He saw that there is grandfather Bhishma, there are his friends, there are his uncles, and there are his brothers, Kaurava brothers. How can he fight with all these people? And here, we are reading the verse now, just now. When the son of Kunti, Arjuna, saw all these different ways of friends and relatives, he became overwhelmed with compassion and spoke thus. Arjuna uvacha, Krishne mansvajanam Krishna yutsum samupastitam sedanti mamagatrani mukam chapare shushyati. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up. Nata shreyora pashyami hatva sajana mahave adamche vidayam Krishna natarajyam sukhani cha. I do not see how any good can come from killing my own kinsmen in this battle, nor can I, my dear Krishna, is there any subsequent victory, kingdom or happiness? So here, Arjuna is feeling a great compassion towards his Kitanchan. And he doesn't want to fight with them. Arjuna was seeing, how is it that my own relatives and friends are standing on the opposite side, poised to fight with me, and all the soldiers will be killed. And there will be soldiers who are fighting on my behalf, on my side. They will also be killed. And in this way, there is going to be a terrible fight of all people within this Kuru dynasty. And this is never to happen. Although I know very well that Duryodhana is a coward. He tricked us with a gambling match and he drove us away, cheated us of our kingdom. Now he is attached to the kingdom and he has gathered many other vicious kings on his side. And he wants to fight. And although I know very well Krishna is on our side, we can defeat Duryodhana very easily. Still, if Duryodhana is ignorant, why should we be ignorant? If out of ignorance he wants to cause this great bloodshed, why should people like us be ignorant? Let us give up the war. Let us better go to forest. Let us live like ascetics. That was the idea of Arjuna. So he was trying to show compassion to them. These are the three types of people. Asura, Sajjan and Sadhu. Asuras are those, actually the word Asura comes from Asu, Ra. Asu means immediate. Ra means to Raman, to enjoy. So Asura means one who enjoys the immediate pleasures of this world. One who cannot think of after death what happens, what is God and such things they cannot think of. They are called Asura. They want immediate pleasure. So asuras are those who derive joy by seeing others unhappy. That is the kind of pleasure that one gets when others are suffering. When you come to know that others are suffering. Like one lady, in the dead of the night, somebody patted the door, she opened the door, a thief barged in. And immediately he put his hand in her necklace and immediately took it away from her neck. Of course, she couldn't even cry because he shut her mouth with the cloth. And then she said, please allow me to speak something. And he asked, what do you want to say? She said, do you know that myself and my neighbor, we both bought necklace together. Please don't leave her necklace also. Similarly, people are more desirous to see that others should also suffer if I am suffering. Or if others suffer and I don't suffer, I will be more happy. So this is also a mentality, to see that others should also suffer. But a sajjan is one who doesn't want to see anybody suffering. He says, I want to be happy, I want everyone to be happy. Let the whole world be happy. Sarve janaha sukhino bhavantu. He is a sajjan. But sadhu goes one step ahead. He wants to see others happy at the cost of even his own suffering. So Arjuna was in that platform of a saintly person. See, in those days kings are also very saintly. They are called as Raja Rishis. Raja Rishi means, Raja means king, Rishi means sage, Raja Rishi means a saintly king. So like Parikshit Maharaj or the Pancha Pandavas, they were all called as Raja Rishi. So they were very, very saintly people. So he thought, why should we fight with Duryodhana and his party? Let us just leave them. You see, when we administer compassion, we have to know what is compassion and what is not. That's like if a person goes to a doctor with a big boil on the hand, ripened boil, and the surgeon takes a scalpel and is ready to, you know, sever that boil. But then this person is crying. Oh, doctor, please be compassionate, don't do anything to me. See, my parents have brought me to you, but please don't cut off the boil. It's going to be painful to me. If the surgeon starts crying, oh, my dear child, what can I do? In my entire experience of 20 years, I never felt compassion to anybody like you. Okay, I will spare your boil, you can go back home. Is it intelligence? The surgeon should do his duty. Of course, he knows it's going to cause pain to the other person, but then once the boil is removed and cleaned, everything will be all right. So we have to know where to exercise compassion. Everything has a place. There was a small boy in his childhood. He used to be very deceptive. He used to go to other people's houses and steal. And the neighborhood people would come and report to the mother that he has stolen money from a house, he has stolen this and that. And the mother would always be very, very loving to the child. She would feel in her heart, you know, how can I scold him? How can I slap him? She would tell the other people, okay, don't worry, I will scold him, I will beat him, but she wouldn't do anything. But then the boy gradually grew up into a great robber. And he went to such an extent, once he even robbed off from Reserve Bank. He robbed off a bank. And then he was chased by police here, there, and all the places he ran. At one point of time, he had to commit a murder in order to save his own life. And then he escaped from there also. At last he was caught and taken to the court, and he was given a death sentence. And when his mother came to the court, they told him, now you can speak to your mother whatever you want, your last word, before you are given the death sentence. And he called his mother near. Mother, when she went near him, he bit off her ears. And mother started crying loudly. And he told the mother, you foolish mother, if only you corrected me when I was a small child, I would have never become a big robber like now. Now you see my life is in threat. You didn't correct me at the right time. So as it is said, a stitch in time saves nine. So correction has to be done at the right time. Similarly, the Kshatriya's duty is to take action at the right time. The Kshatriya can be saintly but not cowardly. He has to take action at the right time. You know, there was a great king called Nebuchadnezzar. He was famous for his hanging gardens. Where is it?
Babylon,
is it? Yeah. So he had a strict rule also. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Very strict. So such strict things are required in order to keep peace and order in society. Just recently, we heard of terrorists getting into Akshardham, you know, and in Gujarat, and killing so many people. And even there were many other places where they were trying to kill other people. So these elements have to be curbed. So very great Kshatriya power is required. The king has to be really strict with such people. If he doesn't take action at the right time, then people, such elements will start increasing in the society and it will become uncontrollable. So compassion has to be administered at the right time. At the same time, punishment also has to be awarded for the right candidate, for the deserving candidate. But unfortunately, in the modern times, we see modern man is getting confused and bewildered about where to administer compassion and where to administer punishment. Some years ago, in Andhra Pradesh there was an incident which came in the paper. It said that some people are traveling in a bus, and all of a sudden some three robbers came into the bus with a kerosene tin and with a matchbox and threatened the people that if you all don't remove your wallets and give us, we will set fire to the bus. And all the people became very fearful. They all removed the wallets and gave it to them. So they went up to the end of the bus and collected everything and returned back, showing a knife and everything. And then when they returned back up to the door, when they were about to get out of the door, somehow due to the engine heat, the kerosene got set ablaze. It started firing. Then the whole bus started, burning. The flame went very high. And none of the people could get out. About 60 people were burnt to ashes. And these three people escaped. They jumped out because they were near the door. Others couldn't escape through the window and all. So now, what do you think should these three people do? What punishment should be given to these three people? They were the cause of claiming the lives of 60 people. They deserve the capital punishment. So when they were taken to court, even now the court case is going on, saying that on the pretext of mercy, showing mercy, we should not give them capital punishment. In fact, I don't know, in many countries, the capital punishment has been completely abolished. You don't have death sentence at all, in many countries like that. Because they say it is not at all human. It is inhuman to give death sentence to a person. The very same government, the very same people who talk about capital punishment to be inhuman or uncompassionate, the very same people are causing death of millions and millions of cows. Innocent cows are being slaughtered. You all have heard about it. India is one of the topmost exporters of beef. In fact, nowadays America considers this killing job and cleaning job to be a very nasty job. So they are doing everything in India now and packing it abroad. So they are killing cows and they are aborting so many children in the womb, millions of children who don't even get to see the sunlight. They are aborted in the wombs of mothers. And this is considered compassion. That is why I saw a very interesting picture which showed there was a peace dove. You have seen peace dove, which they allow the dove to fly away. So the peace dove was catching two things in the hand. In one hand there was aborted child, and the other hand there was a cow. So cow is being slaughtered. It was carrying both and it was flying in the sky. So how can peace be there in society when we are killing the innocent animals like cows and killing children in the wombs? So we have to know where to exercise compassion. So those who deserve punishment should be given punishment. That is why the real meaning of violence is, violence means to not give punishment for a deserving candidate or to punish the innocent. This is called violence. We should not punish the innocent, nor should we spare one who deserves punishment. That is why often people fail to understand the message of Bhagavad Gita. Right at the cover, beginning of Bhagavad Gita, in the cover page, we find Krishna and Arjuna on the battlefield. Some people say the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is non-violence. Actually, after talking Bhagavad Gita only, the whole battlefield of Kurukshetra took place. Millions and millions of people were killed. Because this violence was done to establish the ultimate principles of dharma. So, Krishna later on convinces Arjuna that you are talking about compassion, but what kind of foolish compassion is that? Another reason, here Arjuna says later, Kimno Rajena Govinda Kimboga Jivitena Va. He is telling, oh Govinda, our God awaits to us our kingdom, happiness, or even life itself. Then all those for whom we may desire them now are now arrayed in the battlefield. So he is telling here that, my dear Krishna, if I fight and all of them are killed, and I am sure to kill all of them because you are on my side, and if I am alone, then how can I enjoy? How can I enjoy all the benefits and all the opulences that I will achieve in my life? So here he is using the word Govinda. Go means cows or the senses. So Govinda means one who gives pleasure to senses or one who gives pleasure to the cows. Krishna is called Govinda. So Arjuna is asking, how can I enjoy all these things? See, everyone in this world desires that I enjoy the world with my friends and relatives and everyone. Like sometimes somebody goes to Dubai and earns a lot of money and comes back and then wants to share everything with everyone, relatives, friends, and have a happy life. Generally, if you observe in this world, people have a nature to always endeavor to impress other people. See, whether a particular object gives you satisfaction or not is the second question. What is the first question? How can I impress others? Somebody gets a new car, Mercedes-Benz. Now you want to show it to as many people as possible. Like you want to tell people that, see, I have got a new car. Similarly, women want to impress others by showing their beauty. So everyone wants to. So man wants to show his power by showing his money power, and woman wants to impress others by her beauty. That is why they say, don't ask the woman's age and a man's salary. Because they both will become offended if you ask them. So everyone is fond of impressing others, but do you know what happens when you try to impress others? Generally they think, if I impress others, then they will consider very high of me, and they will salute me, or they will talk about my greatness to other people. But these are the things that will happen last. When they try to impress other people, they become envious of us. They become jealous of us. And they think, hey, this fellow, he was a fool. How this fool bought a Mercedes Benz? They think like that. Or if a girl, dresses herself very beautifully with the latest fashions, latest type of dressing, she comes out to show her friends, all her friends will become really jealous of her. They will think, you know, in front of her, nobody will look at me. What do people think of me? So they compare it with themselves. So we can never impress people in this world. When you try to impress others, we only become an object of envy and hatred. And besides that, should a devotee at all try to enjoy, and like here Arjuna is asking, how can I enjoy the kingdom? Actually, no one can enjoy independently in this world. Because we are not the enjoyers. We are called as dependent enjoyers. Who is the supreme independent enjoyer? God is the only supreme independent enjoyer. Why Krishna or God is called an independent enjoyer? We can be considered an enjoyer only when we can enjoy forever without any impediment. But we cannot enjoy like that. Are we proprietors of everything? Are we controllers of everything? We cannot control everything. We can't own everything for all time to come. Somebody may be very high in the business at one time, another time the business may flop, and they may become average, mediocre man in society. In same time, somebody may be very beautiful in youth, and all day they lose all beauty. Isn't it? Somebody may be very educated at one time, but they may be a novice in another field. They may not know anything. So, it is established in the scriptures that the supreme enjoyer is only one. And we are actually cooperators. Or we are like assistants to God. We are servants to God. By serving Him, then we can get enjoyment. Like you all know the story, how that Krishna took one leafy vegetable from the Akshaya Patra and he put it in his mouth. Then everyone was satisfied. All the Durvasa Muni and his disciples were satisfied. So when Lord is enjoying or Lord is satisfied, then we can be satisfied. This is actually the secret of happiness. If one wants to ever become happy in life. See, everyone in this world is trying to become happy, running here and there. Somehow or other, happiness appears to be just 1 inch away. It just misses your hands. You try to grasp it, somehow you feel, you know. If I come up to this, I will become happy. And then you climb up, by the time you come there, the target has gone little higher. Like a man having a cycle wants a scooter, isn't it? For the first time he sits in the scooter, he thinks, I have achieved something great in my life. But then sometimes his wife says, you know, now we have a child, you know, how can we go in a scooter? Better we get a Maruti car. Okay, get a Maruti car. How do you think? Now we are traveling in a car. He can go and show to all his friends. But then, after you become a billionaire, then Maruti car looks like a cycle for you. Isn't it? It's not even a cycle. Maruti car looks like a dabba. Like a box. Then you think, now I should have a much fancier car. Or maybe I can own my own helicopter or a plane. You think like that. So our aspirations never have any end. ambitions are certainly not wrong, but if one becomes over-ambitious, then that will lead one to frustration. But if one keeps Krishna in the center of his life, one makes God the center of his life, and works for his enjoyment, then automatically happiness will come in our life. You can easily see that. You see, every part is supposed to work for the whole. Like every one of us is a part and parcel. You all have seen jigsaw puzzle. You know jigsaw puzzle? You put the jigsaw puzzle together in place, when you see the whole thing, then it makes some sense. But then you take one particular piece and see, it doesn't make any sense. Similarly, all of us are individual parts. We cannot happily enjoy separately. But then, when all the parts work for the pleasure of the whole, then even you can become happy, everyone will be happy by your life. At one time, in our school, they had arranged an anniversary day. So they had arranged about six, seven boys, very beautifully dressed, very attractive dressed, and they had on their chest one letter. So first boy came to the stage with W, and second boy came with E. And there was one teacher who was organizing all of them. She said, you stand first, you stand second, you stand third. She was sending one by one, and she told them, don't just mess up. You have to go and stand in the exact place I'm telling you. And when they all stood in the right places, what did they see? All the audience, they all applauded. Seeing that, and children are looking at one another, right? Why are they applauding? Why is the audience so happy with us? What did we do? We are just coming and standing in the stage. Why are they applauding? Anybody knows why they're applauding? Because they were showing welcome. When every part and parcel works for the pleasure of the whole, then they become happy and everyone becomes happy. So all these children, they were simply cooperating the teacher. If all the children say, why should we obey the teacher? Hey, W, you go there. Hey, L, you come here. If they mess up the whole thing, all people would be put to trouble. So they just obey the teacher. Similarly, if one makes God the center and lives in harmony with God, then one's life will be very successful. Then such a person's life can also transform others' lives. Others can also become happy. So, here, Arjuna is thinking that I am the enjoyer, I can enjoy separately. He doesn't know, he is actually representing an ordinary, average conditioned soul in this world. You see, Arjuna is asking many questions in Bhagavad Gita for our benefit. On our behalf he is asking. We should not think that Arjuna is foolish. Arjuna is a great devotee. But he is representing an average person. Prabhupada gives the example. Sometimes, when in a newly wedded family, when the girl comes to the home, she has come to a new house, and then she may not be very well trained in cooking and serving and everything. She has just come to the mother-in-law's house. So the mother-in-law and father-in-law, they will be very careful in dealing with her, isn't it? Sabji, no. That's a good guy, she puts. And she takes this much sabji and puts it in the center like this. And you're wondering, my God, what is this? How to tell her? They don't know how to correct her. But sometimes the mother-in-law is very intelligent. What she does? She scolds her own daughter. She scolds the daughter, why did you serve like this? You should serve properly. Then when the daughter-in-law is hearing that mother-in-law's daughter being scolded, then she becomes careful. Oh, I did the mistake and she gets the scolding. So then she becomes careful. She doesn't do the same mistake again. Similarly, all of us are compared to whom? Yes? Are you conscious of this example? We are compared to daughter-in-law, who never wants to get any scolding. But Arjuna is taking the role of daughter here. His daughter gets all the scolding and we learn the good lesson. Similarly, Arjuna takes the role of a fool here. He is asking, Krishna, how can I enjoy the kingdom? He is asking here. He said, oh Govinda, of what avails us for a kingdom, happiness or even life itself, and all those for whom we may desire them are now arrayed in the battlefield. So he says, how can I enjoy? After I kill all of them, I'll be alone. I cannot share my enjoyment with everyone. And he's asking like this. So this is a less noble cause than the previous one, compassion. And thirdly, he says here about sin. The last one, the first page.
Papamevashayedasmahatvaitanatatayinaha.
That was it says here, translation. Sin will overcome us if we place such aggressors as Krishna, Therefore, it is not proper for us to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra and our friends. What should we gain, O Krishna, husband of goddess of fortune? And how could we be happy by killing our own kinsmen? Here he is saying that sin will overcome us if we kill our relatives and friends. You see, Shastra says, generally killing is prohibited. You cannot kill anybody in general. And killing one's relatives and friends is considered far more sinful. But here, the word is used called Atatayana. Atatayana means aggressor. In the Shastra, it is said there are six kinds of aggressors who deserve to be killed. For example, if any of you say that, you know, no, we should not kill anybody. But if somebody tries to assault or molest a woman who is dependent on you, like a sister or mother or wife, will you not take an action? Immediately one is allowed to take action. So there are six kinds of aggressors on whom you can take immediate action. And such killing is not considered sinful. So Prabhupada explains that six people in verse number 36. You see, Prabhupada explains who are the six kinds of aggressors. I can read loudly.
A poison giver.
What is the first one, aggressor?
A poison giver.
Poison giver, isn't it? Duryodhana affects poison to whom? Bhima. See, even when Pandavas were small children, small boys, the Kauravas and Pandavas used to play together when Pandavas had returned from the forest. So one day, all the Pandavas and Kauravas, they went to their pleasure bungalow, very near, very close to the river. And Duryodhana had planned that now, today we are all going to play that. And this Bhima is so strong and so sturdy, so we should make some way to kill him. So he had cooked delicious preparations in that pleasure building. And they were all playing in the riverside. It is said Bhima was so strong, even as a small boy, that people who were swimming in the river, they would come out of the river and Bhima would just catch them by the hand and throw them high up in the air. And then they would topple several times and then fall back into the water. In this way, he would have great fun. He was actually throwing them like a ball, all the people. And Duryodhana was watching, one hand is throwing people, in every hand. So he was becoming very envious. Later, while they all went for eating, Duryodhana sat right next to Bhima and started feeding him food. Right into the preparation, he started feeding. So one may wonder, you know, why this person is feeding? He is supposed to be like an enemy. And then he fed him sumptuously and that, even after eating so much poison, nothing happened to Bhima easily. But the evening, his eyes started rolling. And then he went, he fell on the ground. And then Duryodhana tied a big rock on his back, tied to his body and threw him into the river. And he went down in the river. Later on, there were some serpents which bit his body. And the poison cancelled one another. That's how he was saved later. So this way, he administered poison.
One who sets fire to the house.
When Pandavas were living at Hastinapur, once Duryodhana told his father to tell them that at Varnavat there is a big festival. So all people from Hastinapur are going there, so he sent them also. So they were all planning to go, but then Yudhishthira had a suspicion. Why Dhritarashtra is sending only us? Why not his sons? There must be something fishy. He understood it. So they were sent, but by Yudhira's help, although they were living in the Varnavat Lakshadriha, which was made of lac, which was set ablaze later by Duryodhana's arrangement, they were all saved. So this way he put them all in a house and he set the fire to the house.
One who attacks with deadly weapons.
Yes. Here he was ready to attack all his own Pandava brothers with deadly weapons. You see, at one time, Yudhishthira was in Kamyagaman, and Duryodhana came with all his brothers and everyone and his army and everyone to show his greatness, how I am enjoying life, you see, and you people are suffering in the forest. But he was captured by the Gandharvas, because he misused the place which were woodlands of Gandharvas. He used those places. So Gandharvas caught him, they held him a captive and they were planning to take him for punishment. But then who saved them? Saved all the Kauravas? Yudhishthira saved him. And he ordered Bhima and Arjuna to go and save them. Although Yudhishthira, even as an enemy, saved Duryodhana, here Duryodhana is assembled in the battlefield, ready to kill all the Pandava people. See, next.
One who plunders riches.
He plundered all the riches by gambling match. He tricks them.
One who occupies another's land.
Yeah, already has occupied Pandava's land. Isn't it?
One who kidnaps a wife.
Duryodhana, what did he do? He disrobed Draupadi publicly in the assembly in front of everyone. Humiliated her. So in this way, Duryodhana deserves in every respect to be punished, to be killed. So according to the Arthashastra, the Kshatriya is allowed to kill such a person. But here, Arjuna is quoting the Dharma Shastra, which says that even if a relative has performed something sinful, he can be tolerated and can be forgiven. Like that, he was trying to, on the ground of Dharma Shastra, forgive them. But you see, Kshatriya is never supposed to forgive such sinners. That's what will happen. Then the whole society will become polluted by such people, such culprits. Because we see Lord Ram was considered to be such a kind king, that Ram Rajya is desired even today. The whole world is desiring that when will the kingdom come, like the rule of Lord Ram. It is said in Lord Ram's kingdom, even a tiger and deer would come together to drink water. And the water, the rains will come at appropriate seasons. There will be no scarcity, no famine. So people are desiring now, when will time come and we can have such a kingdom like that? But the very same Ram, he took action on Ravan when there was a need. Isn't it? And Ravan stole Ram's wife. He took action and he killed him. In the same way, Kshatriya king can be saintly and benevolent, but not cowardly, as it is earlier. So here also, you should understand, by killing all these people, he will be promoting them to a higher destination, all these people. Because when a king gives a death sentence to a murderer, then the person who is given the death sentence, he becomes purified of all his sins, whatever murder he did. So punishment is already given. But if you don't give him punishment, then he has to go to hell to suffer, terribly to suffer. And the king who spares him the punishment, the king also gets punishment. So these are all said in the scriptures. So here, Arjuna, out of his saintly compassion, is feeling that we should not kill them because sin will overcome us. Krishna will later prove how sin will not overcome us. In the last reason, how many are told, Chinna? Yeah. So fourth one you will see and first one you will see next week. He is giving another valid shastric argument, that is Varna Shankara. You all have the page with you? I can go for another 15 minutes, you all have time?
Yes.
You can take the next page, you can read that also. You repeat after me.
Yajyapyetena pasyanti.
I kill all these men, then their wives will become widows. And if they are alone, then naturally they will be exploited in society by other men. And when other men exploit them, then there will be Varna Sankara that will be born. Varna Sankara means unwanted progeny that is born of illicit relationships. They will be born. And in this way there will be so much chaos in society. And everything will go to disorder. So my dear Krishna, I don't want to be the cause of that. He is saying. You see, according to Vedic society, a family, a husband and wife, they have many responsibilities. Like it is said, there are 40 samskaras to be performed by every grihastha or a family person. Even before husband and wife unite to produce a child, there is something called as Garbhadhan Sanskar. Garbhadhan Sanskar is to invite a great soul to come and be present in the womb of the mother, so that a very divine child will be born in the house. Even in ISKCON society, our devotees chant 50 rounds of Hare Krishna mantra before they unite together to produce a child. And then there are several sanskaras, like Namakaran sanskar, and then there is Annaprashan sanskar, like there are many sanskaras of that. So when the sanskaras are performed, it is said, Janmana Jayati Shudra Sanskarat Bhavet Vija, it is said. So Prahalad Maharaj was born in a demoniac family. But then, because of the sanskar given by Narada, he became a very great devotee. So So one can be born in any family, but by proper sanskar one can be purified. And these duties are to be done by the mother and father. Both of them have their own responsibilities. Like a father is supposed to be the guru of the son. If the father cannot be guru and guide him, then he is supposed to send his child under the custody of a guru and train him in the principles of the Shastra, so that the son is raised in divine consciousness as he grows up. And the child should know how to behave. Like today I saw a child here in the assembly here today. As soon as the child came inside, she went and offered obeisance to another elderly person. So I could immediately understand this is sanskar. When one has sanskar in the family, then naturally they have the habit of respecting others. Like once I was giving prasadam to a small boy. So at that time he was going back home, he was putting his lace in the shoe. When I was giving prasad, he didn't accept it. He said, "Please, 1 minute, I'll go and wash my hands and come." And he washed his hands and then he showed his hands. So by giving good sanskar to children right from young age, you will see that they become so well trained in etiquette. They will know how to behave with mother, with father, with grandfather, grandmother, with others in society when they grow up. So it's very important that right from childhood people raise the children in that way. So here Arjuna is telling that what will happen if all these people are killed? So if not only in a family, like I'm telling you about the family, there are also duties of a king, a kshatriya. If a woman is widowed or if a woman is having no protection, then the king is supposed to protect her. King is supposed to give protection. King has to arrange the facility by which the woman will be protected and she will not be exploited. So the kshatriya strength can be either used for exploitation or for protection. Similarly, the intelligence of a brahmana, the vidwan, it can be used for becoming proud, or it can be used for benefiting the other people in society. Similarly, wealth of Vaishya was lot of wealth. It can be misused by many varieties of sinful activities, like illicit relation and breaking principles, like breaking all kinds of principles, sinful engaging in sinful activities. One can do like that. But at the same time, the wealth can be utilized for promoting Krishna consciousness or God consciousness. So here, Arjuna is giving argument that if all these men die, then the women will be left alone, and the women are supposed to be guided by their husbands, and also father and mother, grandfather, grandmother, even they have a duty also. Like in a house, if husband and wife have a fight, then the father and mother should be there to settle it. Sometimes in a family there is a grandmother or grandfather, who is obeyed by everyone in the family. Like if a husband is creating too much trouble, then the wife will complain to the grandmother, or the grandfather. Grandfather calls the grandson or whatever, and then grandson will be shivering in front of him. Those days are gone. Nowadays, grandmothers and grandfathers are thrown into old age homes. Those days are gone. I have seen with my own eyes, at least in my generation, people shivering when they see the grandmother, grandfather. They are so obedient. And they will obey anything they say. One word they say, they will just obey it. Without a second question, like that. So, in a religious, in a pious environment, such things are possible. So here, Arjuna is asking, if such great people in the family and men die, then the woman, how will they perform good sanskars? And if women are alone, it is said women need protection. When a girl is small, she is protected by her father. When she reaches adolescent age, then she is married, and the man gives her protection. And when she grows up further, then the son is supposed to give protection to the mother. Somebody may say, women may say, why do we need protection? We are also equal to men. So we don't need any protection. Somebody may claim like that. Prabhupada gives a simple example. He says a 16-year-old girl and a 16-year-old boy. Out of these two people, whom do you think can travel all over the world freely? With nobody. Just carry a bag with you, can travel all over the world alone. How many girls of 16 years, 20 years have the courage to just travel all over the world without worrying about anything or anybody? Even the girls who wear pants, shirts, jeans and even they have fear nowadays. Because the world is so bad that a woman will certainly be exploited by men. So they need protection. They have to be given protection. Our psychological, mental, physiological traits in the body of a man and woman are so made that woman needs protection at the urge level, according to the Vedic life. Of course, that doesn't mean women are supposed to be exploited by men. Men are supposed to be guided by Guru, and when men are guided by Guru, they will never exploit women. And man is supposed to give divine knowledge to the wife and children, and when father and mother are practicing well, then the children will naturally practice. They have no problems actually. When they see the mother and father, so, like father is doing obeisances in front of God, naturally child will do. No? Father is doing, mother is doing, child will also do. But nowadays parents say that, you know, you take care of my child. Yeah, we have no time. You will see that my son becomes good. We don't want to, you know, spoil them. You take care of his son, we will go to movie. But actually everyone should practice. It's essential for everyone, everyone in the family. Elders, younger ones, for everyone. So here Arjuna's argument appears to be quite reasonable, isn't it? If all the men die, then what will happen to the women? And they will be exploited, because a woman who is unprotected in society will naturally be exploited by other men. Another man may come and say, I will give you money, don't worry. But I will only claim your body. You give me pleasure and I will give you money, because you are poor. So men may exploit them like that. Or big politicians who have a lot of power, money power and political power, they may exploit. So what can be done? But later later Krishna will give another argument in a later chapter. And to tell Arjuna that, my dear Arjuna, you are saying that by killing all these people, women will be unprotected and they will suffer. But can I tell you one thing? If you don't fight this battlefield and kill all these men, then women will be unprotected. You may wonder, how is it? Their husbands are there and everyone is there. Then how are they unprotected? As a proof, it is explained that Draupadi had all her 5 husbands in her front. And Draupadi was disturbed in front of the assembly by whom? By Duryodhana. If Duryodhana had the guts to do such a thing to a woman whose husbands are like powerful lions, why will he not do the same thing to other women in society? What kind of protection is he going to give to other women? And anyway, he is himself on the path of adharma. How is he going to establish religious principles in society? So when the king is not the Rajarishi, and he is not establishing religious principles, then anyway the man and woman in society are already polluted, because they are not doing any samskara. Man and woman are simply living for enjoyment only. They are not God conscious. The children are also going to hell. So Krishna told, by allowing Arjuna to continue this kind of kingdom, then you are allowing religion to continue. So this is the right time to take action. Like what Krishna proved to Arjuna, that if you kill all these men, then the women, even if women are alone, then who will be the king at that time? Yudhishthira will be heading the whole world. And this can give protection to all women. Because he is such a compassionate Dharmaraj, that he gives protection even to enemies. Why will he not give protection to children, women, cows? He will actually uphold dharma very nicely. So in this way, all the reasons given by Arjuna were defeated by Krishna. You see, the Pandavas are such great devotees of Krishna that they had nothing to enjoy separate from Krishna. When Krishna wanted to make them the kings of the whole world, they just followed what Krishna said. They had not even an iota of desire for ruling the world. But they just wanted to fulfill the desire of Krishna. And when Krishna left his abode, then Pandavas renounced everything. You know, Krishna made them the king of the whole world. Yudhishthira was coronated as the king of the whole world when they came to meet Bhishma-Pitama. They came in golden chariots. Krishna actually told Pandavas, you come in golden chariots and meet Bhishma-Pitama, so that your grandfather will be happy. He has been always desiring that Pandavas should rule the whole world. And then when Krishna left the world, back to his abode, then the Pandavas completely relinquished everything of this world. And they headed towards the north, renounced everything. So this goes to show that a devotee never asks for anything except loving service to the Supreme God. In this way, the entire Bhagavad Gita we will find that Arjuna, whatever arguments he is putting forth, will be smashed by Krishna, and Krishna will convince him at the end to perform his duty by remaining in Krishna consciousness. Similarly, all of us have many reasons in our life to say why we cannot be Krishna conscious. Somebody say, a housewife may say, oh, I have so many things to do at home. What can I say? I have a child. You know, my husband comes from office. And I organize things at home. We have to watch some serials in TV also in the night. That we have time. And we have so many duties to perform. We have to socialize. We have to go to this function, that function. And I have to teach my children. Similar husbands, they say, oh, we come back from office only at 9 o'clock in the night. Sometimes it becomes 10 also. And what can I say? Even in the office, we have so many things to do. Actually, people say they work from morning 5 o'clock to night, 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock. They say they have no time for God, but they have time for reading newspaper, they have time for seeing television, they have time to go to club, they have time to meet their friends, they have time to socialize. So, we may say we have no time, but the reading Bhagavad Gita will understand that all of our false arguments will be smashed by Krishna. So, by going ahead in Bhagavad Gita, we will understand how becoming Krishna conscious is very easy. Where there is a will, that is the way. But unfortunately, Arjuna didn't have a will. And Krishna gave him the will by preaching to him. Arjuna, don't try to escape from your duty. This is your duty. So every one of us here today, assembly here, as a, either a wife or a husband or children, or anybody assembled here, we all have a duty to perform. Our duty is not simply to do a job, simply to earn wealth, simply to run a family lifelong, and quit this world one day without knowing where are we going. That is not the goal of life. While living our life, you have to ask the question, why am I living for? Why always there are so many impediments in my life? Why I can't be happy always? So Arjuna is giving all these arguments. Do you think he is happy after giving these arguments? After giving all the arguments, he started sobbing and crying. He told Krishna, Krishna, I argued with you so much, with all arguments, but still I am not peaceful. So many people say, we have no time, we have this problem, that problem. Still they are in an ocean of problems. When will the waves subside? When are you going to take bath? Some people say, no, when the waves subside, I'll take bath. Do you think the ocean will ever be calm with no waves? So problems are going to be there. Along with problems, you should also practice that consciousness. You should take out some time. Just like we take out time for anything else, like that we should take out time for God. And then you will see that when you take out time for God and you progress more and more in Krishna consciousness, and here there are so many families today here, who are all wonderful devotees, then you will go higher and higher and higher, and all the problems will become insignificant for you. And there are no more problems. Problems are problems only when we are not Krishna conscious. The more we become Krishna conscious, problems will become trivial, very trivial. And Arjuna, you will see the same thing at the end of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna becomes so confident, and he wasn't crying at the end of Bhagavad Gita. He immediately took his Gandhi over and started fighting. Just like a girl who does Bharatanatyam, she goes to the dais. She is dressed very nicely, beautifully. But then she removes the, what do you call that? They put on the head. She put a cloth on. So she covered her head. When she opened her eyes and saw, there were practically 5,000 people sitting there. She became so fearful that she immediately sat on the ground, closing her head. So all the people were, some people were whistling and some people were clapping hands, shouting, start dancing, which was very upright. But when she gained confidence, then she can dance, isn't it? Similarly, here is Arjuna, he is famous for his Gandiva. You know, when he would ring the string in Gandiva, then all the hearts of the warriors would get shattered. It would be very upright. But here, just like the girl was sitting on the stage, Arjuna was sitting in the chariot, you know, not ready to fight. But Krishna gave him the energy. Krishna gave him the wisdom. By which Arjuna's illusion was dispelled. He became courageous again. And he fought very valiantly, performed his duty in divine consciousness. So Krishna is telling all of us, do your duty. Whatever duties you all are doing, do it. But in divine Krishna consciousness. So karma yoga, when we say, all of us are already doing our karma. But yoga means, yoga comes from the word yuj. This means to connect to God. So connect yourself to God. So do your duty and connect the duty to God, then your life will become divine. This is Krishna's instruction for us from Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna, thank you all very much for your patient hearing. Maybe 5 minutes I can take some questions, if anybody has any question based on the class today.
Thank you. just now said that we must not use our money in sinful activities. You can know, what are the sinful activities and why they are sinful?
If Siddhartha is asking, we should not lose our money in sinful activities. What are the sinful activities and what is the second question?
Why
are they called sinful? See, a simple definition of sin is disobedience to God. Very simple definition. Just like disobedience to government of India will put a person in jail. Similarly, disobedience to God is a simple definition of sin. In scriptures, God has prescribed some activities to be sinful because they take us more and more into bodily consciousness. And they take us far, far away from God. Four things are said to be pillars of a religion. Just like a building is standing on several pillars, a religion is standing on four pillars. Tatachanadaram dharma, satyam shaucham dayakshama, kalina varina rajan nanshati ayu balam sinti. It is said in Bhagavatam. There are four principles of religion and four principles of religion. Meat eating is against mercifulness. Gambling is against truthfulness. Intoxication is against austerity. And illicit sex relations is against cleanliness. So, mercifulness, truthfulness, austerity and cleanliness, these are pure principles. If you want to achieve them in our life, you have to give up meat eating, gambling, intoxication, all forms of intoxication. Like cigarette, liquor, all those things. And illicit sex, illicit relation, sex outside marriage, and meat eating and gambling, all these things. So, in the beginning we never teach about this. Generally when we go to classes, we just tell people about chanting Hare Krishna. Because even a meat eater or a gambler can chant Hare Krishna, there is no problem. It's not that, you know, you, like once I was going in a rickshaw, so I was trying to tell that rickshaw wala to chant. He said, no, 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 Swami, I am a very simple person, I cannot chant. So I should not take the holy names, not good for me. Then I told him, even Valmiki chanted. Valmiki was such a simple person, he could not chant Maramara, he could not chant Ramna, not again Maramara. So I told him, if you are sinful, you have to chant all the more. So if somebody is breaking any of the things I told you just now, don't worry about it. We have to chant the holy names. See, chanting is far more a greater priority than giving up these things. Even if somebody is meat eating, gambling, intoxicating, illicit sex is doing throughout the life, still he is chanting, certainly he will be fine. In fact, I can confidently tell you, if somebody chants the holy name, that will give him the sufficient strength to give up his poor activities. Yeah. Otherwise people will ask you, why should you give up? They don't want to give up. So we tell them, okay, you chant. When you get the chant, you get such a taste in that, the unwanted things will automatically go away. Just like I said, when the sun rises in the sky, all the thieves will go away. These are like anarthas. They will all go away. Anybody else has a question? Anybody who came early today? How many have come for the first time today? Please put up your hand. Oh, really? So thank you for coming. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, why there is bad in the world? See, as long as you look at the sun, there is no shadow. When you turn your face away from the sun, you will see the shadow. Isn't it? Similarly, when we turn our face away from God, then all the problems come. In fact, one student asked me, so you say that we should not drink liquor, we should not smoke cigarettes. And why did God create all these things? So He has given us rice, He has given us apple, He has given us oranges, He has also given tobacco. So smoking is also justified. I told them, if this is justified, then God has also created poison. Why did He eat poison? Prabha said it in one argument. So will you say that I eat poison also? Because, see, after all, God has created poison, so I have to eat it. Nobody will eat it. So we are given the good sense of discrimination, what is right and what is wrong. And we have to take the right things and avoid the wrong things. The human being is given the sense of discrimination. And shastras are given. They clearly tell us what is right and what is wrong. When we go back to God, there is no bad in God. There is no shadow in the sun. Similarly, when one returns to God, there is no bad. Everything is pure completely. But this world is like a jail. In jail, you don't find many good things. How many gentlemanly people you find in the jail? You find many? Somebody has robbed off a bank. Somebody has pickpocketed somebody. Somebody has indulged in raping. Everyone has a special history. Go to a jail. Similarly, in this material world, you will not find many gentlemanly people. Very few sajjan you will find. Asur, sajjan and sadhu. So, sadhus and sajjan are very rare. Asur you will find many. So, many bad things are in the world because it's like a jail. So, Bhagavad Gita teaches us the way to freedom. How to get out of the jail and go back home, back to God. Yeah. There are various ways, there are 9 ways to serve Him, explained in the scriptures. One is to chant His names repeatedly and hear the names attentively. Like we will be chanting about maybe 4-5 minutes. So when you chant this Maha Mantra, we chant. And by chanting that and hearing it, gradually one gets to understand God better and better. Similarly, hearing about God, like what you are doing now, that is also a service to God. Like you are hearing about God. So we are benefiting ourselves and we are benefiting others by hearing, because now we are, this hearing is like something like a therapeutic treatment, you know. Like if you have sickness, like in your childhood, you have to be forced to go to the doctor and take injection, you will cry and you try to escape from the doctor and all. But when you grow up, naturally you go and show your hand and you put an injection, like that you show to your doctor. Similarly, coming to classes like this regularly and taking the injection of or pill of spiritual knowledge is also one type of service to God. So Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam is remembering God. After you hear the Shastra, whatever you heard, you remember it. And also you remember God, His activities, His teachings, everything you remember. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Archanam, and then offering worship with Agarbati, Ghilam and everything. Everything has a meaning. Some of them will discuss in detail about this. And then Vandanam is offering Dandavat, obeisances on the ground, and also offering prayers to Him. And then Dasyam, considering oneself to be a servant of God, cooking bhoga in the kitchen and offering it to God first, before we eat it, like that. And stitching the dress for the God, like that. And Sakhyam, dealing with God in a friendly way. And Atmani Vedana, completely surrendering oneself to God. So, we will be learning about these things eventually in future, as we go on, about these things. But amongst all these things, the topmost thing is to chant God's name regularly. That is the only prescription that is most prominent amongst all the things. So can you chant for about maybe 3 minutes?